Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining us this week for another inspirational conversation. This week we have a very special guest. His name is Jorge Delgado Urena. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but I'm doing my best. And he's originally a commercial photographer. Jorge is a professional travel and street photographer now, publishing in magazines like National Geographic, working on exhibitions, books, but he's also a workshop mentor and teacher at the Raw Society, which he co-founded with his partner, Christelle Enquist. So first of all, Jorge, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know what, Jorge, it's been a while since I wanted to chat with you because you've been, I would say, hyperactive, super active on the photography front over the past few years. We've known each other on Instagram, but now it's a pleasure to finally meet you. But before we dive in into the photography aspect of it, can you walk us through how you actually in the first place became a photographer, how you discovered the art of photography and what attracted you to it?
That's a good question, actually. Well, it's always a good question for everyone, but I think in my case, it's interesting. I was a graphic designer for advertisement and things like that. So I was doing logotypes and those kind of things. In my spare time, when I was even younger than that, I was doing graffiti art in the streets. So I was the one with 15 years old with the camera documenting the whole thing. So I always got interested in that idea of documenting things that happened and subcultures and culture and things like that. So after that, I started to do graphic design and advertisement, and I work in agency for many years. And at some point, I decided to stop that and to become a photographer. Of course, at the beginning, it was easier to do commercial stuff because I already had connections with brands and things like that. So for a number of years, I did fashion and product photography and things like that. But eventually, it was the reportage, going around taking pictures of interesting things, and that transition was a little bit more slower, if you like. So I started to have some assignments, collaborating with some newspapers, things like that, until I just went full-on freelance photographer.
And were you always attracted by, you know, the art side of it, the technical part of it, a mix of both? Because I know you're also, you know, into the details, right? So the light, the composition, how it hits, you know, a certain corner of a street. So what was your, you know, view back then, and how has it evolved to what you're doing today?
That's a great question as well. You have done your research pretty well. It's amazing. The commercial aspect of it, it was interesting, the technical aspect of it, the lights, because one big part of my work, especially right after the advertisement, was to do jewelry, which is quite technical. And I enjoyed that kind of stuff, the use of light and masks and stuff like that. But especially with fashion, is something I got bored with it. It was very, it's interesting for many photographers, and I enjoy to look at pictures that people does about that kind of thing. But I wanted something more real, more on the ground, if you like.
Yeah.
And I think that because of my training as a graphic designer and all of that stuff, that attention to details and the graphicness of the pictures, maybe is what you're referring to, the use of the space and geometries, it comes from there probably. It's true. I haven't think about it a lot. What I tend to show with my pictures is not really the artistic side of it. It would be more something related with the how it feels to be somewhere, if that makes sense. You know, this Christopher Anderson says that a story or a picture can have a factual truth and an emotional truth, and both those things are kind of interlinked somehow. So I am interested in maybe a little bit more in the emotional, and I use the visual tools that we have, composition and light and color combinations to try to evoke that kind of stuff.
So I want to double click on that, because that's the whole point of this very podcast about storytelling. I mean, the camera is the tool that we use to tell the stories, but for you, when you walk the streets or when you teach workshops, how do you talk about creating an interesting visual story, and what makes you decide to go click, I want to capture that visual story in the end?
Yes, another great question, and it has his nuances, because one of the things that, of course, I think that we all have different approaches on how to tell a story. It can be something a little bit more abstract, can be something a little bit more specific, right? And I would say, and I try to say to all the members of the society and the people that comes to the workshops, that there's no right or wrong, and maybe you want to express certain emotions and feelings and how it feels to be somewhere, and that's a story. Or maybe you want to focus your attention on someone in particular, like whoever rides in the street, you meet someone that is doing something interesting and you follow them. That would be more like a photojournalistic approach of it, more classic documentary stuff. But what the kind of pictures that basically you need to tell those both stories, both of them being a little bit different, are going to be the same ones, right? You need to say a little bit where you are, establishing shot kind of stuff. You need to say what's going on, what's happening, which usually is the pictures. Those are the pictures that we like to do, is the complex stuff, the action things, and all of that. You need to say who's the people that is there, that it's involved in the story, through some action as well, maybe some portraits, and then a little bit of details to give some nuances of that. And then with the different styles that everybody have, some people is going to use color, some people is going to use black and white, other ones is going they prefer to do more complex layer things, other people less, and they try to be a little bit more evocative. So it doesn't really matter. I don't try to tell to people you have to take this particular picture. I try to suggest the idea that if something feels personal to you for whatever reason it is, because it's related to you because of the weather or because of the faces that you see in the street, that's the kind of pictures that you should try to follow and pursue, and then apply all of those things to the techniques and the composition and the geometries and all of that stuff to say something, to use that technique to emphasize whatever is the thing that you want to say. So we go through a little bit of all of that, and then we go on in the street and we start to photograph.
This is great, and I like the aspect, well, two things. The first one is that there's no right or wrong approach. Photography is an art form and it should stay like that. There's no secret recipe, but to your point, if you add in a couple elements that are key to telling a story, like, hey, we might want to understand where are we in the world.
Exactly.
Because last time I checked, there's only one Earth, and that's, you know, where we live. Maybe very, very soon we'll have other planets to photograph and to be on. That would be great. New types of images. But here, also, you know, you want to feel something. So the combination of a bit of context and feeling something about what's happening, I think it's very important to being able to tell a story. And again, it doesn't have to be layered like Alex Webb, or minimalist like, I don't know, you or whatever. It has to be, it has to make people feel something. And I really like that aspect of it. Speaking of the raw society, so in 2016, with Christelle, your partner, I guess, is you decided to basically launch a workshop, and it turned into a highly passionate community of people that are, you know, discussing art and photography and street photography and so on. So how did the idea came about, and how did it evolve to something that I would say that big, quote unquote?
Yeah, it's not that big as it looks. Well, now we're about 200 members, and we're about to, I think that the 15 or 18 members professional. So it got a tiny bit bigger, but it's not a huge entity anyway. Everything started in Nepal, basically. one of those first big kind of assignments that I got, projects that was more traveling around and going to more weird places, was going to Nepal to cover the anniversary of the earthquake that they had there in 2015. There was this thing that was in the northern part of the country, so loads of people, they had to leave their homes and go to Kathmandu, and the UN put together this huge refugee camp only for Nepalese. And so I wasn't there to document all of that stuff. And Christelle, who we already were friends from Barcelona, she was there doing all the stuff. She left advertisement as well, her work, and went to do a solo trip around Southeast Asia, and in happened to be in Nepal at the time. And she was working in an NGO as well. So when we finished our work, we traveled around the country. We fell in love with the country and with each other, and we decided that was such a special place that we needed to do something beyond just publishing or doing bodies of work about the place, to show other people what's going on there, because we found it very, very interesting, right? And we thought that bringing groups with us and experiencing this kind of photography, that it's people-based and reality-based with other photographers, would be great to spread the word about the country and to have these interactions and to learn from each other and all of those things. And eventually that evolved in going to other places like Morocco or Cuba. Now we go to Iraq, to the States, we go to do workshops and things like that. And then we started to have the membership kind of thing, which is more an online mentoring where people can share with us their projects, and we can talk about it, and we can do sessions of edit and critiques and lots of things.
That's pretty cool. And I like the love for a country and love story for you personally that happened. Sometimes they're, when you're in the right mindset, the good things happen to you. So it's good for you, and it's also good for us, because the Raw Society was born out of love, I should say.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. That's great. So let's talk about what people get when they are in an environment like a workshop from you or Christelle, or when they are discussing in the community. What's the added value? And I really want to bring the attention on, if you're a photographer and you want to grow as an artist, please, please look into communities, right? Because don't just look at Instagram or YouTube, especially not YouTube. Being on YouTube myself, I can, and I know you
myself,
are too. Yeah, you too. Don't look at the comment section on YouTube and think that this is the photography community. There's, of course, other more, I would say, more engaged and more relaxed in the community than the YouTube comments. But so what would you say somebody, how would you advise somebody to join or to find those groups like yours, like the Raw Society?
Yeah, I think that to start, being a photographer is a very lonely kind of thing. You go to places and you are alone most of the time, which is good. It's something that it's important, because if you are two, you are a group already, and you start to not to engage enough with the people and with the environment that you are in. But so it's lonely enough to be a photographer, and I think that other parts of being a photographer is like editing your own work and sequencing and to put together stuff that makes sense. You need collaborations with other people and to create new ideas and to learn stuff. I mean, it doesn't matter how long have you been a photographer, that you always you can apply the things that you have seen from other person to your own kind of doing photography, to your own way, of course. And that's valuable. And especially the part where I think that every photographer goes through the same stages, like the techie stuff, the camera, the lenses, and those things. And then you say, okay, like, I want to use it. So maybe you go to the streets and you look for single pictures and just have fun taking pictures. But at some point, you start to develop a voice as a photographer, right? And then you say, I want to say something about what I'm doing. That means that you need to develop narratives and stories, basically, right? Whatever those stories are. And what happens in that at that stage is that it's very complex to abstract yourself from your own work often, right? So if you find a community that it's honest, right? Because I think that's important. It's a community that is honest, that they want to help each other and they want to grow together with the photography, is when you can share work and to have constructive feedback and critiques and say, well, look, knowing your style, maybe this is something that you could do to emphasize whatever thing about this project or this other thing of your photography, or things like that are more practical. There's lots of people, for example, that they like a photographer. You were mentioning Alex Webb. He uses a 35. So if I like his pictures, I'm going to use a 35. But maybe the personality of that photographer is not the same one as Alex. Maybe the person that likes Alex Webb's work, he's or she is a little bit more observational and needs a little bit more distance. So maybe it's a 50 what that person needs instead of a 35. So talking about this, having this feedback and these conversations that are not, oh, I like your layered pictures, or this is a fancy thing, or a great character you catch in the corner of somewhere. It's a little bit more in-depth, the conversation that you have in these communities. I think that's the value of it.
You're totally right. And I mean, we're halfingly joking when we say that, you know, just don't just look at the comment section. Oh, nice silhouette on the corner of Fifth Avenue and blah, blah, blah. That's, yes, it's interesting comment, but when you're part of a community, then you talk about the art of the evolution of, you know, yourself as an artist. What inspires you? What drives you? What story do you want to tell? Those are the questions that I think you're a bit like me, Jorge. You think that this is what makes you grow as an artist and ultimately as a person. But because you talked about focal length, I'm opening the door. This is not a gear show. I always say it, but people are curious, right? So, and you've been, just like me, a big fan of a specific brand. It happens to be Fujifilm, and there's a reason for that. You explained it in a video, but regardless of the tech that's in it, I'm more interested in understanding your thought process behind, you know, X-Pro and getting a smaller body, because you travel constantly. What were the reasons why you ended up with a bag full, I'm expecting full of Fujifilm lenses and a couple bodies too?
Well, my bag is quite small, actually. I started obviously working when I started working as a photographer. Digital was starting, so all the professional work was still with film. When I swapped to digital, I started working with Nikon, which is what I was using for film as well. So for many years, I was working with these huge bodies and stuff like that, until Fuji came out with these nice cameras, and it took them a couple of years, probably from the first one to the second one, to get a proper camera that works in environments, and it's tough and all of those things, and it's fast enough and things like that. And something that I like about the Fuji, the X-Pro line of those cameras, is precisely that you have an optical viewfinder. It's one of the main reasons, basically, because all the rest is basically the same with the rest of the Fujis, I would say. But the optical viewfinder is something that I enjoy a lot, because I never got used to the digital viewfinder, basically. It's more like a old-fashioned kind of thing.
Yeah.
And saves battery, which is more of a practical side of it. And I have just two or three lenses only.
What are they? We're curious.
I have a 23 1.4, the old one. I'm lying. I have a 27, the Pancake.
Of course. 2.8. Yeah.
That it's pretty nice. I don't use it a lot, but I like the idea of it.
So small. Exactly. I have it. I'm showing it to Jorge on the screen. You can't see, but this lens, guys, don't sleep on it. It's so small, perfect for street photography.
It's great. I like it a lot. And I like the fact that, you know, one of the things that happens to me, that it's a little bit weird, maybe for people that is listening, is that I hate perfect pictures. All this sharpness, all of that stuff, it's not, I'm not interested in that. And there are some lenses, some Fuji lenses, they have certain something, character, whatever you want to call it. And the 27 is one of those. It looks different.
Yep.
It's not bad. It's not unsharp, but it's just a little bit more interesting to me visually. The same thing happens with the 23, the old one, the 1.4. It's not faster. It's not weather sealed. But it has a certain look that I think it's beautiful, and I like it.
How about the 35? Tell me you have the 35 1.4, the old one.
I don't have it. What? I don't have it because I'm not a great user of a 50 equivalent, a 35.
Got it.
When I have members that they come to workshops, and loads of them, they have it, and I use it, and I say, oh, fuck, this is great.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. So, but I'm not a great 50 user. So I have the F2 version just in case, that I use it maybe 2% of the time. And then I have a 56.
Yeah. The old one.
Magical
portrait lens.
Exactly. That it's also small, and it's something that I don't use a lot either, to be honest, but sometimes for some assignments and things like that, I have to have a little bit more of a reaching, and that's it. But that's it. I mean, I have two bodies because maybe one of those breaks and I need to have a backup. But if it wasn't the case, I just would go to places just with one camera, to be honest. Yeah.
And did you convert Christelle also to the Fuji world?
Yeah, she uses an X-T. What was she using now? She uses an X-T3.
Yes.
Yes. But she likes wider stuff. She uses the 18, tiny one, first one as well. Yeah. F2 a lot, and pretty much everything that she does is with that, actually, and she also carries the zoom, the 18-55, the cheap one,
of course,
which is very nice. And sometimes if she needs to, again, for some commission, something like that, to reach a little bit more, she uses that.
So it's funny, we both have partners that are into photography also, and one day we were traveling to, I think it was Portugal or something, and I was looking at my girlfriend, basically, and she was rocking her X-E4 with that pancake lens and taking shots, and I was like in my bag searching for lenses, and I had, you know, all the lenses that you mentioned plus, and I was like, what am I doing? Like, I should literally have an X100V and call it a day, or just have that pancake lake that lens that you mentioned, and stop fiddling around. So advice to young photographers out there: bringing extra gear won't make you won't make you a better photographer. Plus, it will basically mess with your brain. Exactly, because you have two. It's a analysis paralysis, right? You have too many choices, and you're like, oh, but that scene requires a wider angle. You know what? Zoom with your feet, and I'm sure you teach that in the workshop. Yeah. You have a lens, yes, and if possible, use your feet as your zoom or as your reframing option.
Exactly.
So
I say that like any other photographer. Yeah, get the lens that you feel that's going to be right for you and see what it does. And because we all have, I would say, even if we use other things for specific reasons, which I think it's important to know how to manage a telephoto lens, for example. It's important especially if you want to become a professional photographer. Like in November, I had this commission to go to Kenya to do a safari, imagine.
What, you didn't do your safari with the 23 1.4?
No. So I had to ask a friend at Kashi to let me use his Canon stuff and the 100-400. Yeah. But you have to be able to use different things if it's required. But basically, your core body of work, your vision as a photographer is going to be related to probably just one lens. Right?
I agree.
35 or 50. Something like that, 28, whatever it is, that is that has your signature as a photographer.
You said it best. And when you look at photo books, this is also something I want to talk about, Jorge, right after this. But look at Soil Lighter. You know, he was an 85 guy, and of course, he has shots at 35 and 50, mostly 50. But man, his signature shots are all at 85. So that's how you get, you know, deep into this stuff and you find your X, you know, you feel you're on your X with that specific lens. And like Jorge said, you might want to have a couple other lenses because sometimes you cannot zoom back because you're against a wall or something. Yeah. You know, you want a 28 or something. So all that being said, we talk about books. Well, you publish some stuff in books and zine and so on and so forth. But what are you looking at when you want to get inspired? And we talk about Alex Webb and some other photographers. So who are your inspirations? And is there a book down there that people should absolutely grab because you're like, guys, this is the book that inspired me to become a photographer?
That's an interesting question. People ask me this, and I think that there's such a range of great masters that everybody should study. That to say just one or two is not nice, I would say. For myself, I like, well, the usual suspects, I would say, was Alex Webb, of course, David Allen Harvey, all of these people that I think we are kind of in the same realm of style, if you like. So to me, it's interesting to explore them. But for example, something that I study carefully, it's the work of people like Annie Leibovitz, for example.
Yes,
she has a book that was called, I think, the 1995 to the life of a photograph of a photographer, something like that. It's a big book where she shares reportage stuff plus the portraiture of the celebrities and things like that. And it's very interesting to me to see how she's a real artist, right? She's like this true Renaissance artist, and what part of that book is in the Balkans during the war, and it's very interesting to me to see how she approaches those situations of reportage with this black and white gritty Tri-X kind of stuff, 35mm. With such an elegance. So I think that you can find ideas and inspiration from people that it's a little bit outside your field, even more than people that it's closer to your own stuff. But photographers that I like a lot, some of them you are not going to know them because they're Spanish and they don't translate.
No, but we want to know. We want to explore new avenues. I mean, again, Alex Webb and Joel Marowitz, they're great, but we know them. So who are those great Spanish artists?
So for example, one of my great favorite photographers is a Spanish one that it's called José Manuel Navia. I will send you the name and all
Thank
of that.
Thank you. And I'll put it in the show notes for people to click on.
Great. And it's a real shame because his books are fantastic. And I'm talking about storytelling. He is one of those photographers that his idea, he doesn't illustrate concepts. He evokes ideas a lot. And often the topics that he talks about are quite newsworthy, basically, right? I remember one that it was about the countryside parts of Spain where people were leaving to the cities, they were getting abandoned and things like that. It's called Alma Tierra, the book. It's a beautiful body of work. And there's barely people there, which is interesting. He's a documentary photographer. But the evocation of the weather and the mood and the atmosphere of those places are just fantastic. His use of color is magnificent. I like him a lot. Then other people that I like a lot, also all of them have books actually. Gilles Perez, for example, would be one of these eclectic, quite interesting magnum photographers that does super heavy layered but intriguing compositions and very consistent with his work that I would say. Chris Killip, for example, it's easy to buy books from Chris Killip, another photographer that I like a lot. And I will tell to people, and this is the teacher in me maybe talking, that if you're going to investigate or look for masters and great photographers, look for ones that they are not here anymore.
Yeah.
Right? I think that you can learn loads of stuff from them, but you are not going to copy them because that world, it doesn't exist anymore, right?
That's true.
If you are looking for replicate something that whoever, I don't know, Chris Kelly used to do in the 60s.
Yeah.
You can find ideas and stuff like that, but those things are not here anymore. So you are not going to fall in the trap of becoming too similar, right?
As much as I like, and one of my favorite photographers is Saul Leiter, and as much as I like him, unfortunately, I won't be able to replicate any of what he captured because, hey, it was done in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s. A couple things about you publishing your work. I'm pretty sure you're a bit like me, and you have a love-hate relationship with social media. Or I just saw that you're on Substack. I launched my Substack too a couple days ago, or relaunch, should I say, in search of alternatives to the big, I will call them GAFA, you know, Google, Facebook, and all these guys. What's your point of view? Has it evolved? And I know you're using it to promote the workshops and so on, but for your work, where does social media sits for you?
I don't give much attention, to be honest, to social media. I just use it, and with the Raw Society now, for example, we have since last year, we have a studio manager that helps us with many things, and one of those things is social media. I don't give loads of attention to it because it doesn't worth the time, to be honest. I think it's nice. What is useful from Instagram, I think, is when you are going somewhere and you want to meet people. Hey, I'm going to be in Istanbul. Who's there? And maybe we can have coffee or talk or whatever it is, something like that. But to share work, Instagram is not the place, obviously, right? For many reasons. The first one would be the size of it. It's just the worst. It's just too small. Second of all, is fast food photography, they would say.
Kleenex or fast food photography. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. And I don't really care about it. It's there because everybody has it. And yes, as you said, you can redirect some people to other platforms like Substack, something that I like a lot, for example.
Yep.
That always is going to be less, any kind of newsletter platform, always you're going to have less people, less subscribers or followers or whatever we call them. But the people that subscribe to your newsletter platform, they're really going to enjoy what you have to say about it. You can show their essays, you can write about it, you can put together something that makes a little bit more sense about the story. Some people, a very small percentage of people from Instagram, they go there to see what's the new thing. But the people that eventually will buy your books or they like to collect prints and things like that, this is never going to be people from Instagram. It's always going to be people from other spaces. From the whole social media, I would say that YouTube probably is quite powerful. I would say.
Yes.
I think that it needs a little bit more of this, of talking more stuff besides cameras and things like that. But I think it's powerful if you want to also promote stuff and to share ideas, even essays. I think that something could work on YouTube. But definitely, in my opinion, something like Substack, it's, to me, it's perfect because you can put words and text, and you can add sound and things like that, and you can really say something of your work with that.
I completely agree. And Substack, again, I really entice people, listeners to this podcast, to go see Substack and to go see Jorge and mine, because it's literally the best of both worlds. So it's not just you alone on your little website. And of course, we recommend having a website, your own and operated place where it's you and you control everything. But Substack offers a community-based type of platform without algorithm-driven advertising platform. Because believe it or not, all the other guys, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they're advertising platforms.
Even YouTube as well.
Even YouTube is an advertising platform that has a social component to it that offers a service like video repository for YouTube or photos. I shouldn't say photos on Instagram. It's no longer true. Reels, video reels on Instagram and Facebook to connect with your family and loved ones. But I will go back to finding that happy middle, and I think Substack is onto something. They just need to add a bit more features for photographers, for visual storytellers, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think they're there. So so speaking of platforms, so where would you recommend people to go see what you're doing personally and also what you're doing with the Raw Society?
Well, for the Raw Society, I would say to go to the rawsociety.org. We have everything there, which is, I understand that it's a little bit funny to understand because we do bizarre stuff and everything is a little bit mixed, but more or less you can guess what's going on in the website. And my personal, funny enough, I don't have a website for myself.
Well, you have a Substack though. I'm on
it
right now.
I decided not to have it. I didn't want to have more stuff.
Christelle has one though. I saw that.
Yeah, she has one. Yeah, a website is something that it's really important. I mean, I'm talking about that, and I tell to everyone, build your own website, your own thing. I mean, it's basic. I had I made the decision or not to have it because I don't want to have more stuff to do. I don't know if I need or not, but I don't care sharing a portfolio or something like that.
Wait, and you're not a commercial photographer anymore. That's also something exactly, that, you know, yeah. you're not getting hired to shoot a watch or something. You don't need to show the work.
Yeah, I don't need to have that. I mean, still, I think it's important to have a website, to be honest. It's a mix of laziness and not having time and not really want to have even more work than I have. But to see what I do, my personal approach to photography, the Substack, for example, is something I like a lot. I try to put there some stuff that I like, that I'm proud of. And I think it's interesting because it's a very personal point of view of some stuff that I've been in commissions, for example, and assignments for magazines that I re-edit in the Substack forum, that I put quotes from people and things like that. That I think that gives another understanding of what you can do telling stories about people and about places.
And I would recommend Jorge's story about Northern Iraq, because all we got from Iraq, especially in the US and Canada, was bad news and images of war and so on. And Jorge's work is so, I would even say hopeful and positive and people-based and story-based. I really, really enjoy that. I will recommend it because that's another feature on Substack that's very good. It's not necessarily retweeting or just, you know, Slack. I call that Slacktivism. Just, oh, I retweeted it. I reposted it. No, you can recommend and add a bit of your own story or what, you know, that story made you feel and so on and so forth. So really entice people to go see that on Substack. And what's next for you, Jorge? So you're in Istanbul right now. So are you traveling the world with Christelle for the next foreseeable future? Any specific plans that you've got in the works?
Yeah, we're quite busy until August. I would maybe it's September. From here, from Istanbul, we go back to Spain for a week, and then we go to Cuba. From Cuba, we go to we go to Tanzania.
Wow.
This is the, after 2 years, this is our, how you call it in English, the wedding trip.
The honeymoon. Honeymoon, yeah. The
honeymoon. Exactly.
So a Spanish guy asked a French guy, how do you say in English? And we're like, this. Yeah.
Yes. As a honeymoon. But after that, we go to Botswana to do another commission there.
Nice.
And I'm thinking about going back to Iraq in August or late August, the beginning of September, because I found the place so interesting and there's so much more that I have to explore and say about it that I think that I'm going to develop some kind of story about that place. And that means that I will need to go back a couple of times more and spend maybe a month, something like that. And to see what happens.
See, that's true dedication, passion, and commitment. I commend you for that, because it's easy to take nice pictures. It's harder to have a body of work that will stand the test of time and build a legacy. So I think this is, I often talk about this on this podcast, is the difference between impact and legacy. Impact, it's hard to have, but it's, you know, easier than building something that will be a legacy. So, and I think you're working towards the latter. And again, I want to congratulate you because not a lot of people are taking that commitment that, hey, I'm going to invest so much time, effort into a story or telling a specific aspect of a country and so on and so forth. In Iraq, I can think about the other countries where it's easier to work and to, you know, get into the country and tell those stories. And I think we need more people like you who are going to those places where if you only watch, you know, Western media, you might not have the same story.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I stopped working with magazines. It was a decision that I made as well, because it was, it's too weird, it's too specific. They have different agendas and stuff like that that I don't agree with, basically. And I think that when you start to pull off your own platforms, your Substacks, your stuff, and you have with the newsletter that we have, with the Raw Society is way bigger, obviously, right? So when I have to do a zine or I have a book, and I know that those people are going to be really interested, and they trust me that I'm going to be truthful, and I'm going to try to do things well, that I'm not trying to cheat anyone. I'm going to be honest with what I have to say. But at the same time, I know that they are going to be honest with my work as well, which is, which I think it's important, right? We're talking about social media and these things. People, sometimes this quote that say, point you to the moon and you look at the finger with these ethics and stuff like that. I think that audiences need to be honest as well with what's important in a picture or a body of work. But yeah, I'm going back to places many times or more than a couple of days. It's also something that allows you to get deeper, to have a deeper understanding of places and stories and ideas.
Well, we are looking forward to seeing the work. I want to congratulate you on the wedding trip or honeymoon. We found the right word. And I want to thank you, Jorge, for your time today, because this was such an inspiring conversation. I feel we need to grab a coffee somewhere in the world and just keep talking about the great stuff about outside of the gear and so on and so forth, the story that we're telling and so on and so forth. I feel I could learn a lot from you, and hopefully we can do that somewhere in the world at some point. If you ever come to Canada, let me know, because I will definitely make sure to connect. And and again, I want to thank you for your participation today.
No, thank you very much to you for having me and listening.
Thank you. And I've been Fred Ranger. If you want to give this podcast a 5-star review in the App Store, it would be greatly appreciated, because you know what? More people need to hear conversations like the one I had with Jorge, because he's such a great storyteller. He's such a great teacher. And tag one of your friends on this podcast so you can listen to it and also benefit from all of his knowledge that we just shared today. I'm also Fred Ranger on YouTube, on Instagram. I have my own website and now Substack. You know what? I'm going to start talking about Substack more. So go on my Substack, subscribe, and you'll get all the latest and greatest. And of course, please keep being creative and enjoy. See you next time. Cheers.